You're listening to Syntax, the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Strap yourself in and get ready. Here is Scott Tolinsky and Wes Boss.
Welcome to Syntax, the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Today, we've got a really good episode for you on monorepos and a whole bunch of the tools that surround running a monorepo. We'll talk about what a monorepo is. Let's do a little sneak peek of what it is. It's running multiple projects or multiple things in one single Git repo and being able to automate starting and updating dependencies, all that good stuff. Today, we are sponsored by three awesome companies. We got a brand new sponsor today, Content by Kentico, which handles all of your content management. We've got Log, Rocket, JavaScript Session Replay, and FreshBooks Cloud Accounting. We'll talk about all of them partway through the episode. How are you doing today, Mr. Scott Tolinsky?
Oh, I am all over the place. I thought we're just one of those nights where like all sorts of things, you know, happen. The dog's got to get up in the middle of the night and all sorts of weird and wacky things. And the next thing you know it's the morning and you're trying to get your brain moving. And it's been a rough one for me today, but yeah, I'm doing all right other than that.
All right. We just had our first major snowstorm of the winter. Mm. So the kids have been home from school for all of Christmas. And then they were home because of COVID. And finally, they're going back. Everyone's so happy. And the first day they're going back, snow day. But they're super happy about it. So we're stoked that they can play in it. All right. Well, let's get into it. Maybe we should just start off with our own experiences with monorepos ourselves. So specifically, I have never really dipped into building a monorepo myself until lately. I had worked on a couple open source projects. The Keystone JS is a huge monorepo. But what is popular is like for example, I have my like Boss Monster, which is my course platform. And inside of that, there's many things. There's the video player, which is its own React package that I've created. And there's also I have an entire admin dashboard, which is Next.js. And then I have the entire server rendered marketing websites for everything. And then we have the dashboard. And there's just a whole bunch of different like pieces. And a lot of them are separate applications. And in order to have them all in a single Git repo, you can use what's called a monorepo. And it used to be popular just to have multiple repos, but it became a bit of a pain in the butt to have to manage content amongst multiple repos, because like if you're changing one thing and you need to change something in another package, it's really nice to be able to just have one thing open and dip into all those packages and just publish a new version for everything that you have touched.
So to give you another example, ours is very similar to yours in that we have essentially several packages that are consumed by both the API and the user interface. So we have the UI, which is a SvelteKit site. We have the API, which is a Fastify API node server. Then we have a shared code folder, which doesn't even contain any node modules, just shared code between the server and the client or any packages we might have.
Is that just like helper functions and totally handy stuff?
Date functions, formatting things, the things that we use all the time for both some of our environment stuff. Then I also have created a handful of open source packages for Svelte. So I have a side menu, an element query package. I forked one of the data tables packages to have it work with SvelteKit and server-side rendering. And Svelte Toy, which is my thing for modifying global state really easily. And then I have an admin UI project, which is a React site, actually. Just a straight up React site. That's our old interface, but I still use some of the admin tools on it. So I keep it around just while I'm porting some of that stuff over still. And then we have other packages. I have an AutoForm package and jQuery, which is our GraphQL client that I made. And so we're using this not only to share code between, but we have some several full-on projects. And then we have some open source libraries that are actually, since our main mono repo is a private repo, those nested shared open source packages are all being brought in via submodules, Git submodules, which is where you have another Git repo kind of referenced inside of a repo. Many people seem to hate that technique, but me personally, it's been working out just fine, I think. So,
yeah. I was trying to think, like, that makes sense, I think, because, like, you want those to be open source, right? You want those to be readily available on GitHub. And if that's the case, then if it's not 100% open source or 100% closed source, it's somewhere in between, then you have to do something like that, right?
Right. And that's the toughest part. When I was looking for monorepo solutions, I was like, it's not like a use case that comes up that often where you're like, all right, I need the main thing to be private, but some of them to be public. So how else would you do that? And there's not a lot of good ways of mixing public and private repos with many of these things other than by using submodules. So if anybody has like the most ideal flow for that, hit me up. But I do think the submodules one is working really well for that for us.
Yeah. Yeah, the monorepo has been really handy because previously what I had done for some of my workflows is that if I needed something to be fixed, like let's say I was, the big one for me is my ESLint. If I'm working on my course platform and I find, there's something different in my ESLint that's getting in my way, I need to update the ESLint. Hmm. What I would do is you can either use like NPM link and like link it to your local version so that you can work on your local version at the same time. Or what you can do is you can just fix it, publish a new version and then update it, NPM install. And like, that's not a very good workflow, especially when like for example, in Keystone.js, the entire CMS, every single one of their, not every single one, but a lot of their like fields, like a image upload field or a date picker field, all of these can be their own package. And like let's say you have to change something across 11 different packages. That's a big pain to do. So better is you could just have folders, and you have like a packages folder, and you can make those changes. And in real time, you can see what they look like. And then when you're ready, you can run a script that will publish all of them to NPM for you.
Totally. Yeah. That's the best way to describe it. So in reality, like you've kind of been saying that a monorepo is to have multiple packages in one repo and to be able to manage those and orchestrate them. And they are useful specifically for the reasons that we've kind of largely talked about here, where you're sharing code across packages. They can become really helpful with larger teams because larger teams can both make all of their code available, but at the same time, keep it all separated in a controlled manner where you're submitting pull requests to single packages. You have your own packages that are all kind of referenced throughout the project. But again, it's a keeping everything sort of separate. And overall, just organization and orchestration, right? Like you've mentioned, trying to install things across many packages, trying to update versions, try to keep things connected, trying to run one thing that relies on another thing that might rely on another thing. All of those kind of workflows are benefited from monorepos. So if you're just a solo dev working on a single project that's a Create React App site or something, a monorepo for you is not going to be a great idea. But if you're working in a team or you're doing open source work where you have a lot of packages available, or you just like splitting up your code into a lot of smaller packages and actual smaller, entirely different projects, essentially, then a monorepo might be something that makes more sense to you.
And I've heard that like Facebook and Google and these big companies, Google will store like every line of code that it's ever written in a single repo. Like it's massive, and they've had to make their own version control system or fork Git or what was the one that everybody used before Git that WordPress was SVN, Subversion. I don't know what they're on these days. It'd be kind of interesting to talk to somebody who works at Google, being like, what happens if you need to like make a change to Google Docs? Like, what does that look like?
Yeah, I would love to know how that monorepo feels to use. I mean, I'm sure it's not terrible because you know it's used by such a large organization, or else they wouldn't do it that way. But yeah, it's a very interesting topic to me, and specifically now that I've done a little bit more with monorepos, I definitely understand the appeal. Even though I'm only on a small team of people, not a giant team.
Yeah, like I've heard people talk about forever. I'm still pretty new to this. I think Scott's probably used, I'm only a couple of weeks in. You've used yours for, how long have you had a monorepo running?
It's been a long time. It's been a long time, but my current iteration of it, the PNPM workspaces one, has only been maybe 3 or 4 months. So really not that long, but this to me feels the most classically monorepo of anything I've done. Because before I was unknowingly kind of writing my own orchestration monorepo manager tool just out of like node scripts. And then at some point I was like, I'm just totally reinventing the wheel here. Somebody's already done all this better. So,
well, let's get into that then. So with like monorepos can be used across like any coding language, but obviously we're JavaScript devs here and we're using NPM or a related tool. So the idea is that you create what's called a workspace, right? And I think Yarn was initially the first person that pioneered this whole thought. That's why a lot of people moved initially to Yarn. And NPM, as of NPM 7, also released workspaces themselves. So the way that it works is that in the root of your repo, you have a package JSON. And in that file or in a separate file, if you're using PNPM, we'll talk about that in just a sec, you define where all of your packages actually are. So NPM 7 rolled it out. I tried for freaking forever to get mine to work, and I kept getting the hairy thing is that dependencies are really complicated because you've got your main package JSON. Often you have stuff that is shared in that main package JSON, and then you'll have like you'll have tooling in your main package JSON. I specifically have my tooling in my my ESLint in my main package JSON. Is that where you put yours as well?
Yeah. Yeah, although it's funny, at some point, I think StyleLint has stopped working for me since moving to this monorepo. Okay. I need to figure that out. But yeah, I do. And sometimes when you create new projects, it's like creating like if I create a new SvelteKit package, it's going to want to create a new prettier RC file and a new, all these ESLint RC files. I have to always remember that I already have a default one. I don't need to keep creating these. Definitely takes little bit of a mind shift. Yeah.
So that's your main one. And then you have like a packages folder or something, a folder. And in that folder, you have another folder for every single one of your other mini repos. What do you even call that? It's a mono repo. And each of your items in your workspace are in that folder. NPM 7 rolled out workspaces. It was working for me for a while. And then I just started getting into this like weird space where like if you NPM install in your main repo, then it also installs in all of the child workspaces as well and tries to use NPM link behind the scenes to link towards each other. And it just was such a pain in the butt. I had people from NPM trying to help me, and finally I just gave up on it. I said, Scott's always talking about PNPM. let me try it. And I just PNPM, I made a workspace file, took 2 seconds, boom, worked flawlessly, has been for a week and a half. So that is why people, remember we were talking about PNPM with Scott, and I was like, why do you use that?
Yeah.
This is why, it just works.
Yeah, I only switched to PNPM because of how smoothly the workspaces onboarding went. I know that at the time, NPM had just gotten workspaces. Yarn had workspaces for a little bit, but the PNPM one just seemed a little bit more effortless in terms of the workspaces file and all of that you needed to set up. Just felt way smaller and way less work. Sometimes I pick things based on how much work it will require me to do. What does the config file for this look like? All right, this config file is only 10 lines. I guess this is the one. Ridiculous.
Specifically, I was really enjoying that. I had set this whole thing up for NPM workspaces, and moving over to PNPM was just creating one more file with literally 3 lines in it. And I was like, this is great that we have like somewhat of a standard in that I don't have to like change the code in any way. It was just a little bit of config. And specifically, the problem that I know people are gonna be like, well, what was the issue with NPM? Because like, I know people don't like NPM and they're like, use Yarn, whatever. And I've always been like, I just want to stick with NPM. Like my courses are not NPM. I don't want the whole Yarn changing on me and then my courses are out of date. I just want NPM. So I always try to make it work with NPM. But there was like this like, you know, the frustrating error of cannot find package, whatever, and it's not been installed. I'm like, I freaking installed it. I can see it.
It's in the folder.
It's in the folder.
Yeah.
And finally, I threw my hands up in the air and moved over PNPM, and it's been great. And it also does, you've said this before, but it also puts, like let's say you install like React or Lodash, It tries to install them globally on your computer so that if you've used React in like 15 projects, it only installs them once. So you don't have 40 gigs of node modules, which is an excellent idea.
Yeah, it's great. I actually went to PNPM first after that, the dreaded, like, you have multiple versions of GraphQL in your project. And I was just like, no, I don't. Where are they? Yeah. And then you're like having to nested, just like trying to find this thing. It's like, come on.
Yeah. Yeah. The freaking NPM ecosystem is amazing in that, like, literally everything you can install and you can, just this whole ecosystem is beautiful. But also, like, when it doesn't work, man, ugh.
It's beautiful, but it's also a train wreck at the same time.
Yeah. We'll talk about Yarn really quickly. Yarn 1 workspaces is what a lot of people are telling me to use. Yarn 2, I guess, also has them. It doesn't seem like a whole lot of people have moved to that. I did not get into Yarn at all. So it's probably worth checking that out, specifically if you have a large team. But PNPM worked great for me with like 5 minutes of work. So I was really happy.
Yeah. I know I used Yarn for maybe a little bit when it first came out, but then once NPM's got a bunch of performance improvements, and then the workspaces thing was enticing. But yeah, now that NPM is really very similar, it's kind of hard to choose Yarn for me. You know, it's also an easy decision is checking out one of our new sponsors today is Content by Kentico. Wes, do you want to talk about Content by Kentico?
Yes, we got a new sponsor, Content with a K by Kentico. It's a headless CMS, which is pretty cool. They have live editing, so your non-technical users can use it. And they have, like, if you, the developer, what do you care about that? Well, they got a REST API, a GraphQL API if you want to use that. They have all kinds of tools that make it really easy to work with JavaScript or .NET. Or in any other language that you possibly would want. They have lots of good integrations with Next.js, Gatsby, Nuxt, GridSum, PHP, Blazor, you name it, they'll integrate with it. They have live editing for Jamstack and other apps, which is really, really cool. It's just really sweet. So you want to check it out for your next project. Go to content.ai, K-O-N-T-E-N-T. .ai/syntax. And that gives you an extended free trial. Normal free trial is 1 month. This is going to give you 3 months. So check them out. Thank you, Content by Kentico, for sponsoring.
Content by Kentico. Cool. All right. Let's move into, let's talk a little bit about like the process of working with, you have a package.json in your file. All these node modules, what do you do with them? What's the process for managing all of these different libraries? Because we're all using thousands of libraries in every project. So
yeah,
really what it comes down to is each of your packages end up having their own package.json that manages their own packages, essentially their own versions of this. But you can manage the install process across all of those from the repo, or even, I'm going to be speaking a little bit just straight from how I manage PNPM workspaces. Okay, so I know a lot of these tools that we're going to be mentioning later on have their own ways of doing these things, their own way of working in your repo. But for me, I'm able to remove every node module with a PNPM clean command. It just removes all the node modules. Then I can do PNPM install from the root, and it's going to reinstall node modules through my entire stack. So every single package that I have is then going to get their packages installed. And those are all going to be shared across that root repo in terms of versions, and it's all going to be done via symlink. So for me personally, it's pretty easy to quickly install and manage all of our dependencies across anything just with a simple PNPM install command, just like you would do from any given individual project.
Yeah, I absolutely love that because with NPM, I spend a lot of my time deleting node modules and deleting the package.lock and then doing a re-npm install and everything will work after that. And that PNPM clean command is great. And NPM does this as well, is that it will walk through every single one of your dependency folders. So I don't know if we made this clear or not, but every single one of your workspaces has its own package.json file, meaning that like my video player will have any, like the Vimeo JavaScript API is a dependency of that. But then my API has a dependency of Express, you know, like they all have their own dependencies. And then when you run npm install from the root, it will walk through each of those and install everything that is needed between all of them.
Totally.
Let's talk about uninstalling things. Each of yarn, npm, pnpm have their own way to install and uninstall. They all have flags where you can install something in a specific workspace. Or what I found easier is just cd into the actual directory and running pnpm install or npm install. The one issue I have is that I can't get past running npm run dev instead of pnpm dev. And there's a couple of people that have scripts that will overwrite that and check which one you're in. And I haven't implemented any of those just yet, but there are solutions for that.
Yeah, I'm fully used to it by now. It just feels normal to me. It's funny. I find myself doing pnpm for every projects that aren't. I'll have like the opposite problem of that, where I'm using pnpm in projects that don't use pnpm.
Oh yeah,
yeah. So we talked a little bit about that. You would do this to reference and share code, but like how exactly do you do that? Now again, this is speaking from a pnpm perspective, but a pnpm perspective. That's nice little alliteration going on. You know, the way that we do it is that you have your dependency, your normal dependency in your package.json. But when you install a package, let's say I have a package named at level up tuts hello, and I do pnpm install at level up tuts hello inside of this mono repo, add another package. What it's actually going to do is look inside of my own workspace and see if that package exists. And if it does, it's going to essentially just symlink to that folder. And the package.json will be prefixed with the word workspace in your dependency line. So it will say at level up tuts /hello. And then for the version number, it'll say workspace colon, then the version number. And that's how you know that it's actually looking inside of your workspace for that package. No more having to deal with npm link. Let me tell you, npm link has got to be one of the most mysteriously, like, I have no idea if npm link ever works. When I run it, I'm like, I don't know. Just, I can't tell where it's loading this code from. I get a nice visual. I can paw through the repo. I know that if I make a change to the workspace file, that it's automatically going to be available to me in whatever project I'm currently working on. So to keep this going on with the pnpm thing, again, this is my experience with pnpm, is that by default, you're often running commands from the root. Like I said, like pnpm install is going to install things for every workspace, every package in your workspace, where if you want to run from one thing, you have a couple of options. Now, I'm wondering which of these you primarily do, Wes, but you can cd into your package, like cd packages UI, and then do pnpm blah, blah, blah inside of that. Or you can use the filter command from, or the filter flag, I should say, from the root. So pnpm install this thing --, filter, then the package name that you want to reference. So if I want to install one thing to only at level up tuts hello, I would use --, filter at level up tuts hello to say, okay, only install this or only do this task to this one repo. You're filtering that way. And then what I've done from there is I've created a ton of scripts inside of that root package.json that has the filter already baked in. So let's say if I just want to run the UI development, I'm running just pnpm UI colon dev. And what that does is that runs a node script that just says pnpm dev --, filter at level up tuts /UI or whatever the package name is.
So, oh,
yeah.
So you can use that UI colon in front of the dev command and that will run.
The colon is just a formality. Like you don't.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there's nothing magic about the colon. It's just like how they did it. So then I'm like, all right, that's how they did it. That's how I'll do it.
Runs. Okay. Because I've been using Turbo Repo for that.
Ooh.
But I'm curious if that's. Some of these tools overlap responsibilities.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure which one I should be using for what. So I was just said I've been CDing into the directory. Mostly because I can't remember what the thing to type into the the --, filter.
Yeah.
Because it is different for npm. I think it's -w or dash dash W or dash dash workspace or something like that. Mm-hmm. Now it's, oh, I see what you're doing here. So we'll put an example in the notes here. I was misunderstanding what Scott was doing. So he just makes his own script.
Yeah. Sorry. It's hard to say these things. This is like code, these commands, you say it on the audio. Yeah. It's definitely hard to.
Yeah. So I have a question here. And I couldn't find a great answer to my like 5 minutes of Googling for this. So if you have like, let's say you have two packages that both need React or both need Svelte. Mm-hmm. What do you do? Do you install the dependency of Svelte in both of those packages? Or what I've also heard is people just have a third or another package that simply just imports the shared dependencies and then immediately exports it, which seems a bit odd to me.
That seems a bit odd to me too.
Yeah.
I understand why, but you know, yeah, I do the former. I don't know. That seems a little intense to me.
Just install it. So if you have an update to Svelte, then you just have to make sure that you are updating Svelte in multiple packages and making sure that you're on the same version for each of those.
You want to know how I do it? I mean, besides doing it visually, I'll post the command in here. Basically, so PNPM has their own like visual updater. So I have in my root repo, I just have an update script. So the script is named update. So I type PNPM update. And what that runs is PNPM recursive up -L -I, which will give me the latest versions of all of the packages in a visual way where I can say, install this one, install this one, install this one for all of my repos. So that way I can do all of the Svelte updates at once, make them all the same version, hit enter, and it's going to update across all of the packages.
Beautiful. Yeah, I can see that. Like both of those are kind of tricky because you do need to put a little bit of remembering it. I think that's better than having to, like literally what some people would do is they would have like a shared package. Yep. And in that shared package, they would install React and then they would import React and then just export it right away from that file. And then you have to like import React from shared. And then like that's probably a pain in the butt for types and all of that. So I think I like that version that you have much better.
Yeah, it all seems like a lot. And maybe that's why there's tools that exist to, you know, help with this.
Yeah, absolutely. We have actually, you're by listening to it, the show on Monday was about updating. So I'm glad that we talked about this now because we are about to record after this a show on just how you update your projects when there's lots of dependencies and many versions of them.
Totes. Well, if you're managing many different versions of different libraries, you're bound to make a mistake somewhere because let's face it, this stuff's intense. And that could really lead you to have some bugs in your application. And then you might like a sponsor to help you solve one of these bugs. In fact, I just hit a bug today. I was just chatting with Wes today. So this is a good use case for LogRocket here because LogRocket definitely would have come into play had I not gotten 800 emails about it this morning. I pushed an update to the site and I updated the SvelteKit version, which removed had a breaking API change. And then therefore I pushed a breaking API change with, for some reason, not finding it. I don't know how I didn't find it before it went live, but seriously, within 24 hours, I had a billion people trying to reset their password all at the same time on the site for some reason. And all of those people had trouble with that. So because of that, it would have thrown an error and exception in there. I'm sure if I log into my LogRocket right now, I would have seen various session replays. That's right. A video replay of someone trying to go to the password reset page and seeing the exact error that I have seen already. And that error caused by an API change has caused my site to break. So if you would like to have visibility as actual video scrubbable session replay with console logs, network requests, all that and more, you'll want to check out LogRocket. It's really, truly a next level service. LogRocket.com/syntax, and you'll get 14 days for free, and you'll be able to see the error messages, see the bugs, and hopefully not have to get a bunch of emails from people who had an issue. So that'd be great. So check it out, LogRocket.com/syntax. Thank you so much for LogRocket for sponsoring.
All right, let's talk about some of these tools that are also handy with monorepos, because what ends up happening is that, like, let's say you want to run npm run dev, and that will start up your GraphQL server. That will start parcel to you watch your CSS for any changes, and you want to bundle your JavaScript, and you've got a whole lot going on there. And sometimes what happens is that you open up several tabs in your terminal, and you run npm run dev in a couple of these. There are some tools out there, and that's not all they do, but there's sort of this growing area of tools that will make this much easier for you. Probably the most popular one lately that we've heard a lot about is Turbo Repo. It's built by Jared Palmer, and was recently acquired by Vercel, which is pretty cool. So we'll talk about Turbo Repo. There's also NX. There is Lerna, which does not have 100% overlap, but is kind of in the same area as well. So let's just talk about what Turbo Repo is, and then we'll get into the rest of them. So at least right now, it seems that they have a couple things up their sleeve in terms of what else it will do. But it's I call it an orchestrator or a build pipeline. So if you want to run npm run dev, but you first need to run npm run build, what tends to happen is a lot of people just string together these ands in an npm script. So you're like, run this, then run this, and then run this. And if you want to do two things at once, then you have to like install a concurrency package, and then it just gets kind of a pain in the butt, right?
I know all about it. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the first thing that Turbo Repo does is it's sort of a build pipeline, meaning that you can just run npm run dev and it will run Turbo Repo run dev. And then you, in your Turbo Repo config, you will define what needs to happen in which order. And that's really, really nice. So you can say, I am going to run npm start, but npm start relies on running npm run build on three of these things first. And you can imagine those get much more complicated with databases and environmental variables and all that good stuff. So that has been really, really nice for me to use. I've been very happy with that. Have you checked this out at all yet?
I haven't. I have questions though for you. I mean, like, the biggest question I have with these tools is that they are a build pipeline tool. I mean, it's just running your scripts inside of your folders, right? It's not like, because what I saw about NX is that it's a build tool, and that like to build a Svelte site, you need like the Svelte build plugin for NX. But Turbo Repo is more along the lines of like how workspaces work, and that it's referencing your own scripts and your own packages. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's smart about knowing it works with Yarn, PNPM, and NPM, and it knows about your workspaces.
Okay.
So if you want to run NPM run dev in all of your workspaces, it will know to go. And then a really cool thing about it is they will also consolidate the output. So if you want to see a console log from your back end and you want to see any build logs from your front end, it's all in one terminal, which is good and bad. But it's nice not have to go hunting for that stuff if you've got multiple things running. And at most projects, at a minimum, have a front end and back end, and you have to run two tabs, which is not the end of the world, but it does get more complicated once you get past that, right?
Yeah. So that's how I do it within PNPM workspaces as well. So I guess, like, what's the added benefit there? Is it the caching? Like, what is the added benefit over using just straight up workspaces?
Yeah, so that's something I don't know in terms of the orchestration, because I just went straight for this. Mm-hmm. So PNPM will also run your let's say you have dev command in your front end and your back end. PNPM will run both of those for you at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
But so, I don't think you necessarily have maybe the control over it where you could say this one relies on this one or anything. Like if I'm running PNPM recursive dev, it's going to run PNPM dev on all of the packages in my repo.
Oh, so, yeah. So this one, you get a little bit more control over that. You can also do parallel builds. So let's say you want to build your CSS, and you want to build your JavaScript, and you want to compress images. A lot of times those things will be one after another. And one of the biggest frustrations in doing builds and deploying the thing is that, like, I don't want to have to sit here for 8 minutes while my website builds. I just want to deploy this thing, especially people coming from the old-fashioned FTP world and PHP. Mm-hmm. They used to be just upload the file you change.
I just drag it. The page. I just drag it on there. Yeah.
Drag, drop, you're done. So parallel builds, it can do incremental builds. So this is another benefit that it has. And I talked to Jared. He's going to come on the podcast and talk about this stuff better than we know. But it can do incremental builds. So
Along that same line, sorry to interrupt. If you have questions for Jared, send them our way. That way we can make sure that we ask all of the questions that you might have about this as well, because I'm interested in knowing what other people are wondering as well.
So Turbo Repo does caching of your build. So it knows what are the inputs to your build, and it knows what the outputs to your build are. And because it knows in and out, it's smart about hashing your content and caching those things. So it says, all right, well, you didn't change your CSS. I'm not going to freaking rebuild your CSS because we already did that last time. I have it. I already have it. And I don't know how that works. Obviously, there's something with it's smart about hashing your content. But because it knows about that, and like I put my parcel in there, and I had a Next.js input and output in there, and a bunch of CSS, some stylus that was compiled in there. And because it knows about that stuff, it can just incrementally build only the parts that had changed. Like, let's say my biggest pet peeve is that, like, I launch something and there's a CSS mistake, and I start getting 10,000 emails about it. I want to quickly change that, but 8 minutes to build the site is a long time when there's people sending you tweets about your broken CSS
or
whatever, right? So you could just be like, oh my gosh, display none, git commit, blast it up, and it will be smart about it, and it could build the thing much faster than doing an entire 8 minute build, right? Like that's really important to me. So another benefit that you get with this caching is that it can do cloud caching, which is, this is not something for me, but I know that some websites, especially websites that have huge build times, they can get into 30, 40 minutes of build times. And if somebody does a build on their computer or on like a continuous integration, apparently you can share those caches amongst your entire team.
Cool.
So it'll just download the cache. So I don't know, if somebody's done some really resource intensive task in your repo, maybe even like AI or video compression or something like that, or maybe it took an image and made 400 thumbnails based off that image, right? Then someone already did that process intensive work, then you could share that cache amongst everybody else in your team. And I bet this is why Vercel bought them, because Vercel wants to be the cloud caching service that you pay monthly for, because it improves the speed of your actual, not only your build, but your dev time as well. And I don't know anything, but
I don't know anything.
I don't know anything, but this is me guessing why these companies do these things.
Yeah, yeah. You should say we have no inside information there. That is your thoughts, but yeah, totally.
Last thing I have here is it doesn't handle your dependency tree. So like I was tweeting about my NPM workspace is not working, and everyone's like, use Turbo Repo. Somebody said they love when I talk like that because use Turbo Repo. And I said, I am using Turbo Repo, but
I am the Turbo Repo. It's a Turbo Repo.
Turbo Repo does not handle the dependencies. The fact that I had the like NPM cannot find this dependency, Turbo Repo doesn't help you there yet. That's what Jared said on Twitter. So maybe there are also going to, there'll be a fourth player in this arena. Where you can Turbo Repo install something. I don't know, but that would be pretty sweet.
Sounds pretty sweet. They should have like a Turbo Time tag.
Turbo Time.
Yeah, that'd be sweet.
So there's another tool that does, I would say, the same thing, which is NX. You can check that out at
nx.dev.
NX.dev. I silly had ignored this for so long because I thought it was Angular.
Oh.
You know? NX? Doesn't that sound like Angular?
I thought Angular was NG.
Yeah. But then there's RX.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I'm wrong. Obviously, it's not Angular. they do the same thing as well. So they have some very good, I think Turbo Repo is built in Rust, and I'm pretty sure NX is built in Go. And they are both very fast. And I saw there was some Twitter spat on who's faster, which is like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Like they all have graphs where they try to compare each other's, and they like, you know, every time a repo like shows a graph of how it's like, it's 5,000 times faster than this other tool. It's like, yeah, right.
Yeah, right.
So I think that this one is also worth checking out. It seems that it's been around for a while. They are they have like a bunch of tools and UI dependency graph tools around it, which seems pretty cool.
It's so intense.
Check that one out as well.
Yeah, I did some, you know what? It'd be nice to have someone from NX on too, just to get a balanced approach here.
Yeah.
But NX to me seems like it's doing way more. Like where Turbo Repo, Lerna, and Rush, they're all running your own commands. It seems like NX itself is taking over the task of being the build tool. So it says it's a fast extensible build system, the next generation build system with first-class monorepo support and powerful integrations. From my understanding, this thing is doing the build tool. And let's say you were running a Svelte site, you would need a special Svelte NX plugin to build the Svelte site. And that to me is a little scary because...
Well, no, that's not like... this is not taking over Vite and Babel and Parcel, is it? Because Turbo Repo just uses... It still uses whatever your regular build is, but it just knows the inputs and outputs.
I'm telling you,
Is it? Okay.
I think that it is. But, you know, NX folks, tweet at me if we're being totally wrong here, and we will retweet you to correct that. But
yeah,
let me read here, because I very distinctly remember this being the build system. I mean, it says that it's the build system, but...
Yeah. We'll have somebody on. This is the one thing about having guests, is I don't ever want to, like, have a guest from, like, one of these things, because then the other people are like, well, what about us? You know?
Yeah.
So we'll have a show from both folks, because... this stuff is, I think, next gen in terms of monorepos and building and big team, big workspaces.
Yeah. So, I mean, this one seems like it is doing more. You need like a special plugin to build any in particular thing. So I wonder how it plays well with all of these different things. Because this says, if you'd like to compile Svelte with NX, you need the Svelte plugin for NX.
Okay, because this one, it says on the NX plugins, many organizations use NX without any plugins. If you are mainly interested in making your workspace faster or enabling distributed task execution, that's seems to be another thing that they do a lot, distributed task execution. Maybe that means like cloud computing based for each of your tasks, then plugins aren't necessary.
Okay. Yeah, it does seem like there's a lot of things in here, whether that is the dependency graph, which looks great. All of them are doing like caching, or at least many of the better ones are doing caching, easy shared code sharing, ownership management, smart rebuilds. There's also a lot of editor plugins, generators, powerful code generation, interactive visualizations, works with GitHub and GitHub Actions. So yeah, plugins for everything. I wonder what these plugins are doing, essentially. Be really interesting to dive into more of this.
Yeah. I'm just looking at the React plugin here, and it does build, dev server, and package. So it obviously does build time, did they rewrite their own, or are they using...
They're probably...
And I know that we should probably know this for the podcast, but like this is a whole new world in that like dev tools are just like being totally... rewritten. Like a year ago, we were all using Babel and Webpack, and now it's just like we've got all these new tools. It's unreal.
Yeah, and if you're feeling like overwhelmed by this, you don't have to know all of these tools. For instance, you know,
there's
10 different ones. You can't use all of them in one project, and I don't recommend you doing that for anything. Just because, I mean, again, a lot of these things are kind of shared sharing the same kind of responsibility. So you really probably should get good at one of them. But it is interesting that this one has such a giant community and a giant amount of packages and extensions for it. So I probably want to spend some time diving harder into NX myself. It looks great. Usually when a service, a dev tool like this looks good, their docs look good, the UI of it all looks nice, it usually means that they've cracked something. They have a lot of users. They have money to spend on those types of things.
They have NX Cloud. Like they have like a paid path already. So like this is pretty polished, right?
If you compare the NX.dev to Lerna's website, it's like, you can tell that they're not the same class of tool, right?
Yeah. Maybe you should try to do NX with your course platform, and then we'll be able to talk about them.
Oh yeah, let me just
intelligently
rewrite everything once more.
Let's talk about one of our last sponsors, which is FreshBooks. FreshBooks is made for non-accountants like you. It's intuitive, easy to use accounting and invoicing software that does it all, from sending and following up on invoices to automatically capturing receipt data for expenses. You get paid twice as fast with FreshBooks, which is really, really cool. One little thing that I did recently in my FreshBooks was you can add your accountant onto your FreshBooks for free.
Whoa.
So like my accountant was like, all right, I need all your receipts and like not even receipts, but all of your expenses for 2021. And I was like, all right. But I used to say, yeah, I just exported them all, but I was like, well, go get them. They're in FreshBooks, you know? So I was able to just give them access directly, which is awesome. So check it out. FreshBooks.com/syntax. That's a 30-day no credit card required. Thank you, FreshBooks, for sponsoring.
Sick. Cool. Okay. Let's keep it moving here. There's a couple more that we wanted to talk about. Lerna is one that's very, very highly used. And for me, this feels like Workspaces in some way, where it's not really doing that much in terms of it's giving you some orchestration tools, it's giving you some organization tools, but it's not trying to take over more of the build process. It's not doing like wild or distributed task execution stuff. It's not analyzing your workspaces. It's not really doing a ton, but it is making it easier to manage multiple packages within one monorepo. And after spending some time with the Lerna docs, because I considered using Lerna when I chose to do PNPM workspaces, and my general thought was just like, why not use workspaces? It felt like it wasn't doing that much more than workspaces was.
Yeah, there's a whole FAQ on the Turbo repo in terms of like, it's like, well, is this different than Lerna or does it do the same thing? And the answer is kind of, but it also does more, but also not as all of it. So it's worth checking that out. I had never needed to get into Lerna. I know that it's a bit difficult to get set up, but again, it's another thing that's worth checking out if you're doing this monorepo stuff.
And a lot of people use Lerna, but I also feel like Lerna was probably the catalyst for tools like Turbo Repo and NX to exist because it just wasn't as good as those tools.
Some prior art. What else is there? Rush.js. A lot of people have recommended that one to me. It seems like it's designed for what, large teams. Has PNPM, Yarn, NPM support. Have you checked this one out at all?
Yeah, I also considered this, and I'm sorry.
It's from Microsoft.
Rush folks, but documentation for this was really pretty rough. You know, it's like you go into like getting started and like one of the first things in the getting started is don't do this. And here are four caveats that you need to know, like do not do this. And like, you should consider deleting these files and doing this. It's like, dang, it doesn't feel exactly like a smooth experience in terms of like the onboarding. I found the docs to be extremely daunting for someone like me. If you paw them open, there's like 800 pages in the docs and filled with all sorts of caveats and who knows what. So for me, it felt like, again, another Lerna where it's not trying to be NX and it's not trying to be Turbo Repo. It felt like more of like a management tool for large teams. And I'm sure I'm getting many of these things, the nuance here, to some degree wrong. But when I was looking at Rush, it didn't give me the warm fuzzies when I wanted to start using it. It gave me a little bit of red flag, like, okay, this is probably a useful tool if you know what you're doing with it. But as somebody who just wants to get up and running with something, It seems
Microsoft-y.
That's
what it is. I think that's the best way to describe it. It's from Microsoft. And I think a lot of it was built off of or like copied from or inspired by Lerna. And I was just wondering, like, what they say SharePoint uses it, Windows Store uses it. So, like, yeah, like Microsoft writes a lot of JavaScript and they probably have some big, big repos. I was thinking that maybe VS Code uses this, but I don't see any. It looks like VS Code uses Gulp.
Yeah, I had this one recommended to me as well. So Rush heads, if there's like something that like makes Rush special, please let us know. Like, what is the thing that makes Rush special? Because when I look at the docs, it does seem to me to do the same things that all of the other ones do. It allows you to easily link packages or even again, like workspaces, right? Install things, cache things, get things up and running faster. Make sure you're not sending duplicate versions. They have like a big thing about NPM doppelgangers where it's like the same library being loaded multiple times. And yeah, they all kind of do that. But what is the secret sauce here? Because definitely does not make it obvious what the secret sauce is.
I'm just looking at VS Code. This is totally unrelated, but yeah, VS Code seems to still be using Gulp to bundle everything.
Interesting.
Lots of people still on Gulp. I wonder how many people still download Gulp a week. I bet it's a lot. 1.5 million.
Yeah, my Gulp video tutorials get a ton of watches still, and I'm super embarrassed by that because that's like those are old videos, man. Those are like 2013 or 2014. I probably I don't know, have had major glow ups.
Yeah, I've got some old videos too that are popular. I'm like, ooh. But also, Webpack has about 20 million downloads a week, and Gulp has 1.5. So not even close.
Not even close. Okay, well, that is it for mono repos. If you, I don't know, personally, I recommend starting with workspaces. And whether it is NPM workspaces or Yarn or PNPM or whatever, the workspace for me felt like mono repo light enough where I'm on a small team. I'm not on a massive team here. And for me, it gave me all the tools that I needed to manage my things. But I'm also interested in some of these larger ones, especially Turbo Repo, because, you know, Jared doesn't miss. He's, you know, pretty awesome at everything. So yeah, I'll give that a try. I want to give NX some more time too. Maybe I'll sit down and not write my code platform in it, but maybe just try to implement it in to some degree.
Yeah, as far as I understand, it just sits on top of your workspaces. So you should be able to integrate it, at least Turbo Repo, maybe not NX, but it's worth, yeah, I'm curious to hear what you think about it. Please do. Let's move into some sick picks. This is a section of the show where we pick things that are sick. And I am going to sick pick something that Scott sick picked a while ago because my wife and I recently went down the rabbit hole of getting a new vacuum. And a while back, Scott had sick picked the Tineco,
T-I-N-E-C-O.
And we went down the rabbit hole of doing the research on the stick vacuum and is it even good enough to replace your plug-in one and all that. And we landed on the Tineco A11. It's not, I don't think it's the same one that you got, but yours has like the app like and the Wi-Fi built in.
Yeah,
no, we got the one that is like dumb, but I think it has the same motor in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it is awesome. It comes with two batteries, has a dock, all these little attachments for like cleaning the crevices of the couch and everything like that. And I'm very, very impressed at how good of a vacuum it actually is. And it's great. You install the charger on the wall, and then you plug it in. And when you dock it, it just charges the battery. And then it has a spot on the top for a secondary battery, because that's the thing with these cordless things is the batteries do run out.
Yeah.
Ours goes about, I don't know, 20 minutes or so, which is long enough to do like a spot. And then you grab another battery and do another 20 minutes. But man, it's been awesome. The Tineco Ala. The only thing I don't like is that it looks like an Apple product from like the 90s.
Yours does. Mine looks like an ugly Apple product from the 2020s.
Yeah, yours is really nice. Mine is like this like green color, but it's also a lot of clear plastic. Like it's awful. It looks awful, but it's great.
It's funny because we had the Dyson for a long time before that, the Dyson one. It's like one of the first stick ones. And it was fine, but the battery was kind of a problem, and you have to charge it. You got to plug it in. You got to hang it on the thing. But with the Tineco, though, the hot swappable batteries, to me, is it like, I don't need that in my phone, but a hot swappable battery and a vacuum cleaner? Yeah, give me
you
that all day.
A tool.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Dyson one, you literally can't take the battery out and pop a new one in. You have to like let it charge.
I love popping a new battery in there, especially when you're like, you know, you're in clean mode. You don't want to be stopped by a battery.
Yeah.
I'll have to stick pick my new robot vacuum that we got because I love the new robot vacuum. That's for sure.
Oh, I'm so excited to hear about that.
Yeah, his name is Lomax, named after Bernie Lomax from Weekend at Bernie's. We thought that sounded like a pretty sweet name. Okay, so I'm going to stick pick the Wyze V3 camera. So the third generation Wyze camera, as they are normally, is very cheap for what it is. It's a little USB camera. It's $35 for the V3. And let me tell you, this thing can be indoors or outdoors. It's like water safe, like so you can put it outdoors without having to have a special case on it. But I think really one of the coolest things for me was the color night vision is wild. I mean, the quality of everything is wild. It's unreal. I had one set up in the kitchen, and I was just looking at it on my phone, and I was like, I left the kitchen lights on. And then I went downstairs, and the kitchen lights weren't on. It was so unbelievable. So I'm also going to stick pick a 10-pack of these cheap little crappy micro SD cards, because when you get these Wyze cameras, you can pay for their subscription, or you can just pop a little SD, micro SD in them, and it will record as well. And a five pack of 32-gigabyte micro SD cards from Amazon is $22. And it's unreal. And
it's so good.
They're not going to be the highest quality. They very well may break at some point. But it's five micro SD cards for $22. Yeah. You know,
I was running six of these at the cottage, and I had two of them crap out because you're writing to this thing 24 hours a day. It's recording constantly. And what's the solution? I'll just buy a couple more and pop them in.
Yeah, I know. And they're tiny. So yeah, you're generating some waste there, but you can recycle them. You have electronics recycling. I don't know what you do for electronics recycling, but we just keep a large bin, like one of those clear plastic bins. We just keep one in the garage. And anytime we need to recycle any electronics, we just toss it in there. And then when the bin gets full enough, I drive over to Best Buy and dump that thing in the electronics recycling bin. So
yeah, we have that with electronics as well as like batteries. Our local, we have like a local waste facility has a special spot for batteries. Mm. So I bring all of our old batteries there. Big fan of all the Wyze cams as well. I'm hoping to get the Wyze floodlight camera pretty soon. That thing, I have the, what's the Amazon owned one? The Ring.
Ring.
I have two Ring doorbells and a Ring floodlight cam, and they are garbage. Mm. All of them have broken and been replaced. And now the floodlight camera just goes on and off randomly when there's no motion at all. So I am over Ring stuff.
Yeah, Ring, you know, the squirrels have been setting off my Ring, and they're outside of you can draw. The latest Ring ones, you can draw.
Yeah, you can draw an area and it still triggers.
Yeah, and I draw in the area, it still triggers. Yeah. Well, if I give you the area, why aren't you looking in that area? Don't even look anywhere else.
Yeah, we have that where our front doorbell camera is we're on a bit of a hill, and I draw do not go in this area. And anytime someone walks in the area, it still triggers it. And it must be that it's on an edge or something like that, but over it. And it's expensive to have to, there's no SD card in it.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping to get the Unify doorbell.
Ooh.
Because I have the Unify. Well, we should do a smart home show again, because I have the Unify rack mount router, and there's a, you put a hard drive in it, and I have all these Unify cameras, and one of the cameras you can get is a doorbell, and it's the best. I have tons of Wyze stuff and I have tons of Unify stuff, and they're not in the same league because the Unify stuff is five times more expensive.
It's but pro gear.
Yeah. The Unify cameras are unreal. Shameless plugs. West Boss. WESBOS.com/courses. There's a list of all of the training courses that I have. You can check it out. Use coupon code SYNTAX for $10 off.
I'm going to shamelessly plug leveluptutorials.com. You can sign up to become a Level Up Pro today, and you will save 25%. We're going to be raising our rates soon in, I think, March-ish. So if you want to get in today, you can lock in on that rate forever until you cancel or whatever. We're going to have new courses from all sorts of really talented content creators. But in addition, we currently have courses from people like Colby Fayok, Brian Douglas, Amy Kaepernick, myself, Ryan Alliance, got a lot of awesome stuff and a new course coming every single month. So thanks so much for watching. That I almost did my YouTube exit. So thanks so much for listening. And we will see you on Monday.
Peace.
Peace. Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.